This is WTIC's Computer Talk with Tab, hosted by Eric Semmel and Dennis Halnan of Tab Computer Systems. Interact with Eric and Dennis by phone at 860-522-9842 or email them in the studio at gethelp@tabinc.com. Get help anytime at computertalkwithtab.com. Now, here are Eric and Dennis on WTIC News Talk 1080.
This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Dennis.
And we are here till 11 o'clock, taking your computer calls, comments, questions, and concerns. And we do have our slightly artificially good intelligence here with Ziggy in studio. We'll see how much we can get out of it, or if it'll ribbit at us normally. That's what it normally does with its artificial intelligence. Also coming up at 10 o'clock, we have Jeff Hogan. He'll be joining us. He is the managing director of the Judy Group. And basically is an expert in healthcare, basically insurance. I've known Jeff for a very, very long time. He was a client way back in the day until their business got purchased. That's what happens, M&A, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
And but he's been in this business for a long time, and he'll be talking about something that I brought up to him that is kind of interesting, and I think it's an article by Gartner, and it's how much is AI upcoding costing employers? And we'll talk a little bit about the medical field and what hospitals are doing to make sure your bill is as big as it can be.
Oh,
I say that with all love and respect of the doctors out there who helped me really get my numbers in order. But and I don't again, I don't begrudge you billing as much as you can for the services you are providing. But hospitals are like one of the biggest users now of AI to make sure that whatever codes they submit to insurance are the proper and the most.
They're maximizing their returns.
Yes. And we'll talk with Jeff a little bit about how AI is being used and how much it's costing employers. Because the insurance companies are saying, oh my goodness, what's going on here? It's not only the aspirin that costs a lot, but holy moly. But as usual and customary, we have our IT news you can use. And do you have anything you want to bring up there, Dennis, to start?
I do. This is a curious little story about AWS, Amazon Web Services, that everybody uses. It's a cloud service, and it's enormous, okay?
Yeah.
Now, what happened this week, as reported by the Register, there was a problem with an estimating service. See, when you have AWS, you have to pay for what you do. It's a pay-as-you-go thing.
When you're hosting something for, for them to host something for you.
Right. You've got a bunch of, say, you know, virtual servers, and you're using them. And you're going to get billed for the bytes that are received and sent by them and the uptime on them and the CPU usage on them and the storage usage. They're all of that you get bills for. You get monthly bills. And in addition to that whole system of billing, there is an estimating service.
Sure. So you can know what you're going to be in for, Dennis. So when you say you've got this server you're designing, you're going to be like, okay, I can afford to put that SQL server up there because here's how much RAM and storage and CPU I'm going to need. We do this for our clients too.
Right. And there's a whole product called Cost Explorer that – you know, keeps giving you notifications about how much you're going to be billed for.
Yeah.
Well, suddenly people were getting notifications that they're going to owe billions of dollars for the next month with a B.
That's a lot of zeros.
And these are not, you know, major corporations that are serving up massive applications over the internet. I mean, they're just doing a little bit of work.
Yeah.
And they might be paying hundreds a month, but they're not paying billions. Okay. And it turned out that there's just a glitch in that service. Mm. And what really stood out for me was how complicated is this billing scheme?
Right.
If you've got a billing scheme that generates the bills in the first place.
Right, right.
And sends them out and you pay them.
Yeah.
And then you have a whole separate service that monitors the billing and sends you estimates periodically as to what you're going to owe next month.
Like, look out, here it comes.
I mean, I mean, how complicated is it if they have to do something like that? It must be insane.
It's the A team and the B team, like we always talk about. The A team is on the billing side. The B team is the estimating side.
Well, the good news is they did finally resolve it. And so a lot of these companies aren't going to have to actually pay billions of dollars next month.
It's crazy.
But it is just insane. The whole business of cloud computing.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, every day I find out something crazy about it that I didn't know when I woke up in that morning.
Yeah.
It's just nutty.
I had met a prospect for Tab a few years back. It was just a hair salon, right? And I say just. I mean, it was a small hair salon. And I say just because they were spending $2,000 a month on AWS hosting of their hair salon server. And I'm like, what are you doing?
What?
How many haircuts do you need to actually have before you then make money as a hair salon? And they thought that was the best thing to do. And they could have bought a server back at that time for, let's say, $5,000, right? Cool. Another $5,000 in software and you own it. No monthly cost versus sending almost $2,000 to AWS every month for the pleasure of them hosting their hair salon software.
Oh, that's insane.
It is insane. I couldn't even imagine how much a haircut costs there. And even for a guy like me, I pay $25 for what I got, which is crazy too.
Yeah.
But they're probably, you know, charging an awful lot of money for those haircuts. My point is, to Dennis's point, I mean, when you try to do infrastructure as a service and figure out how much that CPU, RAM, and hard drive is going to cost in the data center, and you're estimating software, this is just to estimate the bills that are going to come at you.
Right.
Not to actually figure out what you might pay should you choose their service. That
right.
might be a whole different service as
oh,
well.
I'm thinking that they have that. They yeah. must have that somewhere. And you're right. It would be a third thing.
A third thing.
Yep.
So that was just a heads up on the big bill you're about to get. So data centers are definitely an expensive way to go, and it's only getting worse. So we'll see what happens. And speaking of AWS, I had another story. Airbus is migrating 70 critical apps away from AWS.
Imagine that.
Yeah, to France's Scaleway amid digital sovereignty push. So it's not necessarily cost.
Right.
It's purely to deal with the fact that they don't have control over the American data centers, right?
Yeah.
And this is a big issue that we've talked about for a very long time. We've talked about it even within our applications we have now as users of any kind of cloud-based system. I mean, Microsoft could have law enforcement go to them and say, hey, we want you to check on Dennis's email box, and Microsoft will actually give access to law enforcement and not even tell Dennis that they're poking around your email.
Right.
And not that you're doing anything wrong. but they're acting, they're sure acting like you are, right? So the thing is, these cloud services can give access to folks based on whatever requirement, and you may not know what's going on. And that's the same. And Airbus is saying, look, I don't know if I feel comfortable with data centers that will allow access to who knows who.
Right.
They have a total of 900 applications, including an ERP, CRM, and manufacturing systems going to be kept under European control. Okay. And so critical apps are heading away. So we'll see what happens with this type of movement. But this is a very common thing these days. So you're going to find American data centers better wake up and smell the coffee and be able to actually secure the data under the individual country's requirements and not be beholden to American requirements. So how do you become a data center that's going to do that? Do you have to be out of the Swiss? Do you have to actually incorporate in Switzerland as some sort of neutral country? I don't know what you got to do, but
I don't either.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting problem for American data centers, or they need to actually do better than pinky swear. They're not going to let, you know, American government officials to poke around in other companies' data without even telling them. Right. Again, not that they're doing anything wrong.
Yeah, well, this digital sovereignty is a big deal, especially in Europe.
Yeah, they act like it is. Yes, we'll see.
I think there are concerns out there.
There are. But the problem also with European digital sovereignty is, of course, they want backdoors to encryption.
Bingo. And then, of course, in the UK, which is no longer part of the EU, they explicitly have laws about having those backdoors.
Right. So you're not...
So that is a problem, too.
Yeah. And, of course, there's lots of awful things that happen with illicit, with encrypted communications that are just nasty and gross. And you obviously want to stop the bad guys from using those types of technologies to do what they're doing. But you can't then make everybody allow for non-protected communications. The basic default premise of any kind of communication should be that it's private, not something that the almighty Big Brother gets to look at. So it's a tough thing. You know, everyone's doing it for the children, right, over there in Europe. They're saying, hey, we need to make sure this encryption has a back door because we want to make sure you're not doing anything awful. It's got its virtues, but it's not a good way to go. You need to make sure encryption and privacy stays and figure out how to go after the bad guys that are doing those nasty things so that they are punished to the point where they would never even consider doing it. I mean, thumb screws come to mind. I don't think you need to make everybody allow for encryption to go away as far as I'm concerned. So we're going to be here until 11 o'clock, and we'll be talking with Jeff Hogan. I'm looking forward to that conversation about what hospitals are doing to upcode your bills and what's happening with employers now with their insurance. So not only are insurance costs just going up in general due to costs going up, but now the hospitals are figuring out how to just crank that bill for you. And again, they're in business to make money.
Well, yeah, and they should get paid for the services that they provide.
Yeah. It's just better be ready. So then you're going to have the insurance companies take their AI and fight it back.
I was just thinking about that. Are the insurance companies going to have AI that rip apart these bills and then dispute portions and all of that? And then you have the two AIs going to war with each other.
And AWS, is laughing all the way to the bank as all the CPU and RAM is being chewed up. And we're sitting here as the patient saying, why is my aspirin costing so much? We'll be right back. It is Saturday.
Yep.
So, the tunes might have to do with that. Carolyn's working on that for us. We're going to be here until 11 o'clock and taking your computer calls, comments, questions, and concerns. So feel free to get online. 860-522-9842 is the number. And then we'll have Jack Hogan join us. Jeff Hogan. I have Jack on Glastonbury online. That's why I did that. Jeff Hogan from the Judy Group. I also know a Jack Hogan, too, which is all connected in my brain. He'll be here. Jeff will be here to talk about how AI upcoding might be costing our employers. But let's go to Jack in Glastonbury and see what he's got cooking this morning. What's happening, Jack?
Yeah, hi. How you guys doing?
Good, sir.
Hey, listen, I've got a simple problem, I believe. Basically, I've got my computer has a single drive, but it's partitioned into the C drive, which is the system area,
yep,
and the G drive, which is the user area. And the problem over the years that I've had it is that the C drive is filling up because all of the program software gets, defaulted to that drive. And so what I've been doing recently is making sure that when I load new software, it goes to the D drive and keep the C drive freed up.
Right.
But my problem is I have this subscription to Adobe, which gives me my Photoshop and this other stuff. And I get all of these, it's got this cloud thing. And it's got all of these processes that are running on it. When you bring up Task Manager, you see all of these cloud services and that. It seems like it's very complex.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to uninstall it and move it to the D drive, but I'm worried that I'm gonna do something, that's gonna mess everything up. So I was just trying to get an idea from you guys whether that approach would be good because I need to free up some space on my C area.
Hmm. You probably want to do something like that. And what I would suggest if you're gonna remove, it's called Creative Cloud.
Mm-hmm.
From Adobe.
Yeah.
If you're going to remove that, what you want to do is completely remove it. That means remove every vestige of it from the computer. And that isn't going to happen just by uninstalling their software from Control Panel. You're going to need something else to do that. And the something else that I would suggest is called Revo Uninstaller. And
how do you spell that?
Revo. R-E-V-O. We'll post a link.
We'll post a link.
Don't go searching for it. Yeah. Don't. You really don't want to search for that one.
No.
Because a lot of the advertised search results for that are not good.
Right.
In particular, and I don't know why for that software title, but that's how it is.
Yeah.
At any rate, what you do is you'd launch Revo Uninstaller, you'd click on the Adobe products, mm-hmm. and you uninstall them all. At the end, what it does is it launches the program's uninstaller, whatever it is. It'll finish. Then at the end, it'll give you an option to clean up the remnants. And what you'll do there on the Revo screen is click on the advanced radio button and then go through the process of removing everything that it finds. Just tell it to select all and delete in each screen. It'll go through the registry and show you a whole bunch of registry entries that were left. Mm-hmm. Delete them all. You don't need them. And then same thing with files and directories that it finds. Just select all, delete them.
Now what about data? What about all this great creative cloud data that
well,
he's got?
Well, if he's got documents that he created, that isn't going to be affected by this.
Perfect.
So this is all directly program-oriented files and registry entries, not creative documents.
Beautiful.
Or videos or whatever else he's created.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're going to reboot the computer, and then you're going to reinstall Creative Cloud, and you're just going to make sure that you point it to your D drive when you do that. And it should install all of the Adobe products on the D drive under that location.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, Jack.
I got it. That's, I'm glad I called you guys. It sounds really more complicated than the typical.
It is complicated, but once you've seen what I'm talking about, you're going to get it. It isn't. It's pretty intuitive. Okay.
Good.
All right, Jack.
Yeah, thank you very much.
All right, you got it, sir. We'll put that link up there for you. Don't search for it, okay?
Okay.
All right. Have a good one.
Yep.
So that's the thing about these technologies is that if you search for these tools, the bad guys know you're searching for them. And these types of tools are common, but they're going to trick you into downloading the fake tool or the more malicious tool or even tools that have some sort of adware built into it or malware built into it. That's why I want to give you the link. So we're going to be here till 11. Feel free to stick around. Tim in Harwinton, you hang on too. We'll be right back. All right, we are back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Dennis.
And we got Ziggy in the house, as we talked about. Ziggy is our artificial intelligence, and we have Jeff Hogan coming in at 10 o'clock to talk about how AI upcoding is costing employers. Hey, Ziggy, can you explain to the folks how much AI upcoding is costing employers, according to Gartner? Ribbit. We just tested it, too. Hey, Ziggy. Can you explain how
what
much
would you like me to do?
Exactly. That's a great question, buddy. Hey, Ziggy, can you explain how much AI upcoding is costing employers according to Gartner?
AI upcoding increases employer healthcare costs by 1.7% annually. 89% of healthcare AI spending goes to back office tools maximizing provider revenue. Want to know more about how these back office AI tools work and why they're so prevalent?
That'd be great. Give us a little, tell us about it.
Back office AI tools automate tasks like billing, claims processing, and compliance checks. They use NLP, OCR, and RPA to reduce errors and speed up workflows. These tools can cut billing errors by 50%. Complete tasks 10 times faster, and reduce paperwork by 30%. Want to see how specific industries like insurance or hospitals are deploying these AI systems?
No, that's good, Ziggy. We appreciate you finally responding and not ribbiting on me.
I think Ziggy just likes to rage bait us.
Understood.
Yeah, he does, actually, Carolyn. So, or it does. I don't want to give it a... It's it to me. We'll be talking more about this with an actual human with actual intelligence at 10 o'clock with Jeff Hogan. So let's get to your calls, though. Let's go to Tim in Harwinton. What's going on, Tim?
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
We can.
Me?
Yes, sir.
Yep.
All right. I have a browser hijack. Thank you very much for taking my call. On my daughter's computer, I ran Malwarebytes. It quarantined everything. But when I hit the plus sign to go to the Google search, it's still trying to go to the old URL on the hijack.
Mm-hmm.
Multiple URLs, like search-browser.com, developer-server-something.com.
Yeah. So we're going
to
go ahead.
You're just going to have to change the search engine setting in. You're using Chrome or using something else?
Yeah, originally it was Chrome.
All right. You can change the search engine setting in Chrome. We'll post a link to how to do that.
Because it's been modified on
you. It's been modified on you, and unfortunately, yep. Malwarebytes does not look at that. Nobody does.
Yeah.
Literally, no antivirus tool or anti-malware tool
really
that I have ever worked with ever looks at the search engine spec.
Interesting.
They never, ever do it.
Yeah, so you can find yourself reinfected.
I don't know why.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Yeah.
It seems such an obvious, glaring hole in their security.
Yeah.
But they don't do it. They're not going to, apparently. I mean, it's been going on for, 15 years, 20 years?
No,
They're not going to do it. So we have to tell you how to do it.
Yeah. So when I put Google in on startup, it works. But when I hit the plus sign, it tries to go to the
That's the problem. You have to change the search engine settings.
We'll put a link up there for that, Tim. Now, I'm not going to ask how old your daughter is, but do you have OpenDNS running on her computer?
I do not, but I will be loading that if you want to.
It's not a load.
There's
no load. And this is the thing. So you're going to do all this great work as a dad, and you're going to clean it all up for your daughter. And then 2 seconds later, she'll be right back on the same place. Because wherever she's going, she's been before. Or she's going to Google for this or search for that or whatever it might be. So OpenDNS is just basically, think of it as a cleaner internet.
Yeah.
It's a safer internet, or think of it as the HOV lane on the highway, right? Anytime I can nowadays, my wife and I are on the HOV lane because the regular highway is a disaster, right? It's literally Mad Max Thunderdome out there. So I am riding on the HOV lane. That's what OpenDNS is. It'll take you onto a safer area of the internet. And so we'll show you how to configure it. Dennis actually wrote a paper on it that we'll put a link for you.
And I can configure it on her machine because she could be logged on anywhere.
You can configure it on her computer to do that generally, to tell it which DNS servers you want to use. That's a little more complicated when she's mobile, but you can do it.
It is complicated, unfortunately.
Yeah. But you definitely want to also configure it for your own home network, Tim. So you can configure it within your router.
Yep. All right.
Because you're just going to do all this great work, and 5 seconds later, she could easily get back into the situation. We have this exact tool running as a professional solution for our clients. All 9,000 systems that we protect are protected by this simple tool that keeps them on a safer highway.
Yep. Okay. All right. So this first thing, I'm going to be able to modify the search engine again, or no?
Yep. You'll be able to modify it.
You will.
All right.
And that'll fix your problem for a moment.
Yeah. All right. And I'll find that on
Computer Talk with Tab. Yep. ComputerTalkWithTab.com or the name of the show.com. That works as well.
We'll go with Computer Talk.
Sounds good.
When will that be available?
He's doing it right now. Come on. What's the matter with you? What is it with these people?
Right now.
Are you kidding me? Our resolution times are not fast enough for you on this show? What kind of SLAs do you need? Jiminy crickets. If we had a nickel for where is it going to be around? Holy moly.
I know. I work in IT. I get it.
Oh, you do? You can't do that to us then. All right. So we'll get that up there for you instantly. Literally, Dennis does it while we do the show. I mean, it couldn't be any faster.
Wonderful.
All right. Jeez. All right, Tim. Let us know if you have any problems. We'll be here until 11.
Okay. I'll give it a shot right after this. Thank you very much.
It's going up now, right now.
Right now.
Literally right now.
Yeah. All right. Take it easy, Tim.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Man, oh man, customer service. When is that going to be ready? Ay, ay, ay. We in our business, we work on tickets, right? It's like, I think I've told you this, it's like Newman talking about the post office, right? With Jerry.
It just keeps coming.
And then, of course, the catalogs and whatever. But same thing with us, right? Tickets. And, of course, how fast you resolve a ticket is really the key to what IT companies do. And so when he asks that question, when, it just goes right to my core. It's like my stomach gets a little, come on, man. How fast do we need to do it? It's almost like we should have posted it before we took the call. Like, here's what we're going to, we know what he's going to say. Let's go to Tom in Harwinton and see what he's got going on.
Good morning.
Morning.
You don't have my answer up already?
I know. All I see here is Windows updates. So we have no idea what you're calling about.
All right, here's my question. Yeah. And this happened to me once before. Now, we know they had the big update on Patch Tuesday. As soon as that icon showed up in my system tray, I immediately went to settings and I paused Windows update for 7 days because I want to do it on the weekend. Okay?
Yeah.
The icon went away. I put the computer to sleep several times, brought it back up, no problems. When I shut it down at night, guess what happened? It starts doing updates. Mm-hmm. Now, it said it's going to take 7 or 8 minutes. I forget which.
Yeah.
This is the biggest patch they ever had. So you know it's not going to take 7 or 8 minutes. And what I'm thinking is Windows has two different types of updates. The regular monthly updates so they can pause. And then these other updates that have to be done the next time the machine shut down.
Yeah.
Am I right or wrong?
You're right. Basically, these are security updates that are so bad, right? Microsoft has said they're trying to improve their software, and because AI is out there attacking their rather Swiss cheesy software, they're finding that they have to patch the heck out of it. So in this case, you do want to apply these patches. Microsoft wouldn't send them out if they weren't important. Which is even scarier, Tom, is there's tons of Windows 10 machines that have not paid for the extended support updates and will not get these patches. So 622 patches were released on Tuesday, a record amount of patches from Microsoft.
And a ton of computers out in the world are not going to get them.
Yeah, and some of them cause some issues too, of course, but that's just Microsoft, right? But we would tell you to apply them, and you're right. I mean, I think 7 or 8 minutes is probably fine. I don't think, depending on the quality of your computer, it shouldn't be a big deal to apply these patches to the holes.
I updated my computer, this one, last night.
Yeah.
And it took about maybe 8 minutes when it booted up.
So you're good to go on this type of thing, and you should do it because these are big problems, and they're finding with AI out there poking holes at their stuff, the bad guys are going to get ahead. So don't let them happen.
So the updates that did take place, and they did go fairly quick.
Yeah.
Those updates are not the updates from Patch Tuesday. I still need to do those.
Really?
No, I'm asking the question.
Oh, no, that should have been the ones that came down for you, I suspect.
I would think so.
Yeah.
Over 500 updates in 8 minutes when normally it takes a half an hour or more to do the monthly updates?
You can't equate quantity with volume.
The count of the updates isn't going to actually reflect the true changes that are being made,
right?
Because the counts are just not the same thing.
They're just issues.
What I noticed last night when I was updating this computer is that a lot of runtimes were also updated,
mm-hmm.
like the .NET frameworks.
Yeah, that's going to break some stuff.
Those always show up as a separate update,
mm-hmm.
Even though they really are integrated into Windows and they should be, you know, built right into the actual KBs that are being installed. But it showed up as a list of, I think, 10 different update files that were being loaded.
Yeah.
But, you know, next month that might be 2. And then the month after that, it might be 3.
Yeah.
And then maybe a couple months after that, it'll be 12. I mean, it varies. Yeah. So you can't really take that number seriously.
Right. Don't equate how many there are to how much time it might take.
Yeah, that's surprising. All right. So on Sunday, I'm going to duty on pause. I'm going to see what happens. It did change my version number from what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it did some kind of update. So I figured, well, it probably would change the version. But
yeah.
No, I was just surprised at how fast it went. Mm-hmm. See, I like to have control. I don't like to do it at night because,
But Sunday's supposed to be a nice day. Today's supposed to be rainy.
Storms where lines can come down and I lose power. Because you said, never interrupt. Don't shut off the machine. Because if you do, you brick your computer.
Oh, fair enough. Fair enough.
Well, you might.
You're right.
It's not a guarantee.
No, but he's right.
It can happen.
He's right. So you're actually, you're thinking, you're like next level stuff here, Tom. I mean, you're like, wait a minute. I'm going to actually do the updates on a beautiful Sunday. I got nothing better to do. I'm going to do, because I'm worried about bricking my computer because that's how fragile Microsoft is. It is a sad comment. It's a sad comment in 2026.
It's bad. It's bad.
That's, I mean, what happens around here is they're working on power lines, and sometimes the power goes out for a minute or two for no reason.
Yeah, it's not good.
And that's what scares me. So during Monday to Friday, during working hours, I try not to do any kind of look. That's why I said I want to have control.
Yeah.
I was so angry. It was like 8:45 at night. You know, there's drunks out on the road crashing into telephone poles.
Yeah.
Of course, I guess they could do it on Sunday, too, but... Again, I wanted to have control over it. So I'll see what happens. On Sunday, it's a nice day. Today's going to be iffy, so I don't want to fool around with it.
Yeah, man. You have a different thought about you think about your computer way more than I do.
More me.
Yeah, but I appreciate your diligence, Tom. Some people would...
work in IT, so you know.
Yeah, no, I know. But
I'm scared of doing anything because I know everything can be broken in a moment.
Yeah, you know how the sausage is made. So, yeah, no, I appreciate it, Tom. We appreciate your perspective.
All right, thanks for your help.
Thank you, sir. All right, we're going to step out for a quick break. Get to your calls. 860-522-9842 is the number. We'll be right back. All right, we are back, and we're here till 11 o'clock, and then Jeff Hogan is going to be coming in from the Judy Group, and we'll be talking about how AI is impacting our healthcare, but it's not really focused on our improving of our healthcare. It's just working on fattening our bills, which just sounds awful, but it is what it is. So, but we want to get to your calls. Feel free to get online, 860-522-9842. Carolyn, did you want to chime in on that? I heard you in my headset. I wasn't sure if the plan.
Oh, no, I can. You. I just wanted to warn you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Impending Carolyn coming.
Go ahead,
No, Carolyn. I just had an appointment the other day, and, you know, they want you to upload your insurance card so they can on the portal. And I realized that my place uses AI because after I uploaded the pictures, I got a new screen that said, this is the information we pulled. And then I had to go back and edit all the information.
Because it was wrong?
It was trying to say I was on Medicaid.
Oh, boy.
And if anyone's new here, I don't qualify. I am actually way too young to qualify for Medicaid. It started pulling in other letters that weren't part of the ID. Everything was all kerflooey.
Yikes.
So that was fun. And then when I got there, they were like, oh, we'd actually prefer if you don't do this online anymore.
Oh, my
God. I was like, oh, okay.
Well, yeah, you found that
out.
So
this isn't helping anybody.
No. Well, most likely the disconnect between the provider and the IT, whoever is in charge of IT at your the organization is not on the same page. So that's too bad. Supposed to speed things up, Carolyn. Supposed to speed things up. So, Dennis, you had a story you wanted to bring up.
Yeah, I did. This is a story that I saw in local papers. Florida man pled guilty to scamming people using Zelle, which is a payment service that's typically over mobile devices.
Yeah.
A lot of it happens over SMS, which is texting.
Yep.
What he was doing was sending out texts about supposed Zelle payments.
Just to anybody, randomly.
Random.
Smishing is what it's called.
Yes, smishing. And if somebody responded, you know, replied or anything as they were told to.
They got a live one.
Then he knew he had a live person at the other end, and he would call the phone number, whoever it was that responded, and engage with them.
As if they're from Zelle.
And then engage in a takeover of their account or just redirect money to their account as opposed to wherever you wanted money to go to. But anyway, he had to plead guilty, and it was a big deal. And that's why.
Is he going to jail, though? Anything on that? I hope it better be thumb screws and 16 years. For these scammers, because if we just slap him on the wrist, he's going to get back out and do it again. He's probably already teaching his buddy how to do the same scam.
It's possible, but this is white collar crime. So
I'm tired of it.
They don't typically get long sentences.
Yeah, I know. You need to dissuade people from this.
Oh, he hasn't been sentenced yet.
Okay. Yeah.
What happened is he just pleaded guilty. So gotcha. That's now to be determined. At any rate, that's why we tell you when you get texts like this,
yeah,
do not respond to them. Mm-mm. What you do, if you do have a concern that something's going on with your account, and it might, you pick up the phone and you call your bank.
Right.
And you use a phone number that you know. So
not from the text.
Not from the text. Don't call whatever number they tell you to call.
Right.
You call the bank's phone number that you already know and already have.
Mm-hmm.
I have my bank's phone number in my phone as a contact, and if I ever need to call them, that's the only way that I ever reach out to them.
Yeah.
So that's the best policy.
The other thing too is when they're actually preying on your niceness, your kindness. They, you know, a lot of these scams have to do with overpayments or error type payments where you've been given more money than you're supposed to, and it actually does look like you have more money in your account, whether it be Zelle or whatever, what's the other one? Venmo. You could actually see it in your account. And then they call you up and say, hey, there's an error here. I need you to send it back to me. But they don't want it back in the normal way. They want you to send gift cards or cash wrapped in plastic that's then shipped via FedEx, all this weird stuff. My advice to you is to say, oh, sorry, stinks to be you if you overpaid me. Because basically they have not overpaid you. The amount that did end up in your account will be cleaned out. And if you actually send them your actual money yourself, that's going to be a second debit to your account. So whoever's reaching out to you, A, they don't care about you that much. Most companies don't. And just assume it's a scam and reach out yourself to a trusted contact. Never use whatever the reach out is. In other news, Grok, you know, Grok's having some trouble here.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Who'd have thunk it?
Yeah, all these AI dinglings out there. Musk promises purge after Grok build caught sending entire repos to the cloud. So this is a register story. We'll put the link up there for you. And basically what's happening here, a researcher exposed Grok's build uploading users to the entire repositories to the cloud. So if you have some sort of software you're building and using Grok to do it, they're actually inadvertently copying the entire repository of that information to a public cloud. And basically, it's because of the programming. The programmers are using this other area of the cloud as some sort of workspace or some place to dump the information. And it's just how it was programmed, like the B team again, like your other story about the billing stuff. So it's a misdesign of Grok's tool, Grok build. And basically, if you had been designing something, it was available out there for anybody else to take. And this is the problem with this stuff. If you talk about an artificial intelligence company, right? And you're a data center company, yet you don't know your software is doing this. You could probably have asked. I mean, you actually need to be a cynic when it comes to anything you're using with AI. And just if you're a programmer, ask the AI itself if it's doing this kind of stuff. It may actually, except for ours, ours will ribbit, but it may actually tell you, hey, you know what? Yeah, I am actually copying all the data over here to this Google blob here or this AWS blob area. And go ahead and just so you know, it's out there available for anybody and there's no security on it. I mean, if you're going to build it with AI, you should ask to see if they're making these types of mistakes. So we'll put the link up here to the story, but it's just another example that we're still a ways away from getting this stuff to work the way we need it to. Not that I'm against AI.
No.
All right. I love the promise of AI. Speaking of that, we'll be speaking with Jeff Hogan. He'll be coming into studio to talk about how AI upcoding might be increasing your medical expenses if you're an employer. And everything we've talked about has been posted over at ComputerTalkWithTab.com and over
right
on
now.
Right now. Yeah, exactly. And on our Facebook pages over there at Computer Talk with Tab Listener Network. We'll be right back.